This is a good example of what we sometimes call a Markan sandwich. A Markan sandwich is a literary device that Mark uses, where he starts a story, interrupts the story with another story, and then finishes the story. It's a sandwich. It's a Markan sandwich. And just like a sandwich, the bread adds some flavor to the meat adds some flavor to the bread, and the whole thing just tastes better together. This is one of those things, a Markan sandwich. There's several themes that go through it. One is the number 12. The woman had been bleeding for 12 years. This girl was 12 years old. And all throughout it, there is danger. 12 years of danger is what I said in my head when I read this passage. Mark, in general, is a book that kind of has danger lurking in the background the whole time. There's almost just this kind of deep drumbeat of danger. If you've seen The Lord of the Rings, it's like when they're in Moria and the drums start in the deep. So leading up to this, there's been danger. We're only in chapter 5 of Mark. Mark moves pretty quick. He's done a lot of things. A little bit previous to that is a whole series of story where Jesus breaks all the rules. He's healing people on the Sabbath. His disciples are eating grain on the Sabbath and picking things. He's doing things he's not supposed to do. He touches lepers. He's breaking all the rules. And he's becoming a target because of it. And at the end of this particular series, back in like chapter 3 and whatever, is the leaders, the authorities, are gathering together and plotting what can we do to Jesus. And there's danger, even leading to this. A few weeks ago, we read Jesus is at the storm, it's dangerous, and he's asleep. We skipped a story. The lectionary, for some reason, has us skip this part of chapter 5. Jesus is on the lake, the storm crosses the lake. When he gets to the other side of the lake, Jesus and disciples came to the other side of the lake, to the region of the Gerasenes. As soon as Jesus got out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out of the tombs. This man lived among the tombs, death. Man lived among the tombs, and no one was ever strong enough to restrain him, even with a chain. He had been secured many times with leg irons and chains, and he broke the chains and smashed the leg irons, and no one was tough enough to control him. Dangerous. In the tombs. Breaking out. He was howling and making a ruckus. And then we get to this story. Jairus himself, and Mark doesn't elaborate on this, but Jesus is he's a known entity. They've heard of him. And for Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, it's probably actually dangerous to have Jesus in his town. What's Jesus going to do now? What kind of rules is he going to break? Am I going to have to shut him up? Do I keep him out? Like, what do I do with this Jesus guy? And then his daughter is sick, very close to death. A 12-year-old to us seems like a little girl. In their world, she would have been married soon. That's why this translation says young woman instead of little girl. And there's a lot of sadness over the death of a child, and it's dangerous. And kind of right on cue for this neat Markan sandwich, Jesus learns about the near death of this child. Sure, I'll come see. And then the woman comes up behind and touches Jesus. This woman who had been bleeding for 12 years. Full of fear and trembling, she's described. Spent all her money on doctors who can't help her. What we don't get as Americans, instead of first century Jewish people, is how serious a bleeding disorder is for this woman. Because bleeding made somebody unclean. Women in general were unclean because they bleed so often. Psh, dirty people. And it was this weird cultural shame. And she's had it for 12 continual years. And not only is she certainly embarrassed and in pain and all of the, I can't even imagine, but then there's all the societal problems that that brings to her. She is perpetually unclean. When she touches people, they become unclean. She is a contaminating factor. And here she is, full of contamination, sneaking through a crowded crowd, probably touching all kinds of people, making all these people unclean, finally coming to the rabbi, to the teacher, and touching him. And I can't imagine the danger she would have been in to even do that, to risk it. Jesus gets to Jairus' house, and already the mourners are there. There were almost professional mourners who would go around and help people die and help people mourn death. And they would play funeral songs and they would weep and wail and they would help people feel their grief. And the professionals were there already. She was dead, weeping and wailing and playing the flutes and the sad songs. And there's now a dead body, which is another super religious unclean thing. And if Jesus goes near a dead body, again, he's unclean. And there's just this other level of danger and breaking the rules and being contaminated. And then at the very end of the whole story, Jesus warns them sternly not to tell anybody what's happened. And almost certainly one of the reasons Jesus does this repeatedly is because it's dangerous for people to know how powerful he is. If the Romans found out, if Herod found out, they'd come after him and try to kill him, which they do in the end. There's danger everywhere in these stories. The danger in these stories made me think of several dangerous things in our own world. One of them is just one of my favorite songs that says it really well. This is for you, Lenore. "The Grapevine Fires" by Death Cab for Cutie. When the wind picked up and the fire spread, the grapevines seemed left for dead. And the northern sky looked like the end of days. And somehow this is really close to home this time of year with all the wildfires and all the death and the danger and the smoke. And this is what the song is about. The northern sky looked like the end of days, the end of days. And a wake-up call in the rented room sounded like an alarm of impending doom to warn us it's only a matter of time before we all burn. And that kind of captures the danger of this passage. There's doom in the background. Just a few days ago, June 25th would have been Tamir Rice's 19th birthday. He was 12 years old when he was shot and killed. All these number 12s made me think of 12 Years a Slave. If you've not ever seen that movie or read that memoir, do it. It's a horrifying tale. 12 years of danger, suffering, misery. Danger hangs over us like a drumbeat. Gandalf in Moria says they have taken, reads this from the book about when they had come to kill the previous owners of the building, so to speak, and their own danger is looming. They have taken the bridge and the second hall. We have barred the gates, but cannot hold them for long. The ground shakes, drums in the deep. We cannot get out.
a shadow moves in the dark. We cannot get out. They are coming. There is danger lurking in this story and in our lives. So Jesus arrives at Jairus' house. The girl is dead. The mourners are already there. They're playing their music of death, weeping and wailing, almost cursing the danger that haunts us all. But here's the thing, is that Jesus, in the midst of all of this, is not himself full of fear. I can't read this stuff without, like, coming close to tears. And here's Jesus in the middle of all of this story, and he's not full of fear. And one of the best things that I see in this passage is this really great truth that I think we should hold on to. That peace and holiness and love and life, peace, holiness, love, life, these good things, they are the thing that's contagious. Not the other way around. And that's something we don't really know. We think that violence and sinfulness and death are the things that are contagious. And in God's realm, it is the exact opposite. We think that this contaminated person will contaminate me if I get too close or it touches me. But no, that is not at all what the story says. The holiness and peace of Jesus accidentally is contagious. The law says about this woman that she herself is unclean, as has made all these people she's bumped into unclean, and made Jesus unclean because she touched him. But no, we see the opposite. The peace, holiness, love, and life of Jesus is the thing that spreads. Jesus' acceptance of this woman heals the crowd of their fear of her. We think that it's this woman who was healed. And partly she was, certainly. But I think the bigger healing was the healing of the society around her that shunned her. Jesus accepts this woman and heals the crowd of their own fear, of their own shame of her. And we're invited to be healed just like that crowd. Whom are we keeping out that Jesus would welcome? You see, peace, holiness, love, and life are the thing that are contagious. We spend so much time keeping out things that are dangerous and bad and unclean and unholy and sinful and wrong because we're scared. And we need to be healed like the crowd around Jesus and realize that it is peace, holiness, love, and life that are contagious, not the other way around. We don't need to be afraid. Part of Jesus' peace, part of his giving of peace in this story, is this beautiful little phrase he said, "She's only sleeping." She's just asleep. And he comes to this little girl and speaks to her like an adult would speak to any sleeping child. "Time to get up, little girl. It's time to get up. Time to get up." That's what he's saying. So even death doesn't faze Jesus. And this is just one little blip in the midst of all of life that's full of death. But I think that what Jesus understands is that peace and holiness and love and life are the thing that is powerful and wins in the end. And so he's not worried about somebody falling asleep, because he understands that she's only sleeping. Even if you bury her, even if you don't see her again the rest of your own life until you fall asleep and get put into a tomb, even then, somehow God knows that peace and holiness and love and life are the real power in the universe. And that real power is overtaking everything. So that even the very worst things we can look at and say, she's only sleeping. It's time to get up. Time to have hope. Because God's peace and holiness and love and life are making all things new. She gets up, walks around, and Jesus says to them, give this little girl something to eat. Makes me think of Death Cab again. Verse 2, we bought some wine and some paper cups near your daughter's school where we picked her up and we drove to the cemetery on a hill. Cemetery, death, scary. And we watched the plumes paint the sky gray as she laughed and danced in a field of graves. And there we knew it'd be all right. Everything would be all right. Would be all right. So have hope. This is our to-do list. Have hope. Take a nap. Get up. Have something to eat. Have hope. Go take a nap. Get up and have something to eat. That's our homework. Because in the midst of the ordinary things like that, God's peace and holiness and love and life are winning. And they win in those little bitty ways all the time. And little hugs and handshakes and looks. And when we say, get up, little girl. These are all reminders of love and life and peace. And so have hope, and take a nap, and get up, and have something to eat. And in the midst of that, may God's peace and holiness and love and life fill you up.